Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur dritten Folge des ITSA 2019 Special im Cloud Computing Report Podcast. Mein drittes Interview führte mich auf den Stand der Firma Juniper Networks. Ursprünglich war das Gespräch nur mit Lawrence Pitt, Global Security Strategy Director bei Juniper Networks, geplant. Dann gesellte sich aber auch sein Kollege Lee Fischer, Security Specialist EMEA bei Juniper Networks, zu uns. Und so wurde aus dem Zweier-Interview kurzerhand ein Dreier-Interview. Zum Einstieg in das Gespräch bat ich die beiden Herren, sich kurz vorzustellen.
Yeah, so my name is Lawrence Pitt and I'm a strategy director here at Juniper Networks. This in short means that I get to create security content, present at events, podcasts, videos, webinars, whatever you want to do, where we're talking about our direction in security, what we're doing in the security space at the level that an enterprise wants to hear.
Mm-hmm. And he's joined by Lee Fischer, his colleague. I look after the security business for Juniper Networks in EMEA.
Der Fokus des ITSA-Auftritts von Juniper Networks lag auf den Cybersecurity-Lösungen des Unternehmens für Multicloud-Umgebungen und virtuelle Netzwerke. Im Gespräch konkretisieren meine beiden Gesprächspartner nochmals, welche Themen sie auf der Messe adressieren.
Well, we'll be giving two presentations, I should say, at the event. I gave one yesterday, which focused on sort of the way that the security industry is transforming and how we're moving to a more behavioral-based environment, or need to move towards a more behavioral-based sort of protection environment. Lawrence, I believe you're talking about that, the multi-cloud sort of strategies going forward tomorrow.
Today, right? So, yeah, the conversation that I'm having is around about how people are often trying to move so fast in the security space. They finish up doing more than they need to do. And actually, if they slow down and take time and work with the right people to come up with a strategy, then that's going to put them in a better place to succeed, because the likelihood is they'll miss something otherwise. And so that's the conversation I'll be having later today.
Danach frage ich Lee Fischer, wo er derzeit die größten Herausforderungen für Unternehmen sieht, die ihre IT zumindest teilweise in der Cloud betreiben. Wir sprechen über Themen wie Visibilität und Konsistenz. Themen, die auch für Lawrence Pitt eine zentrale Rolle spielen.
Well, for me, I have a lot of conversations with security teams that don't really have a real visibility as to what's going on in the cloud across their business.
Yeah.
And one of the first questions I actually have with them is, where is your cloud asset? Who's using it? Who's accessing it? Who's paying for it? I mean, another big consideration that I see in many conversations is, you know, we don't know who's actually consuming the resources that we're paying for. So the whole thing is about visibility, really, and then everything else can stem from issues that arise after you've got an awareness of what's going on. So for me, very at the top of the list is visibility of who's accessing it, who's controlling it. So that's a big problem. And then there's, of course, consistency.
Yeah, I think Lee's just actually brought the most important thing in any security program that somebody's working on, is to understand what it is that you've got before you think about the posture you want to establish. So everybody gets so excited about the move to cloud and what they're doing in cloud that it's spread very, very fast, and now they're not necessarily in control of what's happening. You've got different departments in the organization managing different pieces to do the same thing, potentially even in the same cloud. And you need to start to think about how to bring that all together. If you think about it, most of the security breaches, most of the security incidents that have happened in cloud recently have been at the basic level. Mm. They've been somebody's managed to get hold of a password and take control of workloads. They've been somebody didn't secure the data they had in the cloud and they left it out there so that anybody could access it. Or they were transferring the data in a non-secure manner. And all of that has come from not actually having that understanding of what you were trying to do before you established your program for the move to cloud. And so that's where people should be today.
Mit dem Betrieb einer Multicloud-Umgebung multiplizieren sich dann auch die Cybersecurity-Herausforderungen. Lee Fischer erläutert, wie es Unternehmen gelingt, diese Herausforderungen zu bewältigen.
I think to fill on what Lawrence has just been talking about, that's exacerbated when you go to a multi-cloud environment. It's, as you said, it's multiplied itself. But another problem is then introduced as well at the same time, of consistency. So how does a security team adopt a security process or a policy universally across those different assets that they have? So first of all, are they present in specifically one type of security domain, in the sense of using, say, Amazon infrastructure? You may have four or five different instances at least running across that. But then you've got maybe instances running in Azure environments, across Google's Cloud Compute. So there's many different environments that they'll be using. And then, of course, it's the, as I said before, it's about figuring out where they are, but then having the consistency to apply a security policy that makes sense in the same way across those different cloud environments. That's a real challenge.
Als Global Security Strategy Director verfügt Lawrence Pitt über einen sehr guten Überblick über die globale Cybersecurity-Situation. Ich frage ihn, ob es seiner Erfahrung nach regionale Unterschiede, zum Beispiel zwischen den USA, Europa oder Asien, gibt. Generell müssten die Cybersecurity-Herausforderungen eigentlich ja überall gleich sein.
The issues are similar around the globe rather than the same. What we see a lot is that the way that people are addressing cloud issues in EMEA is often at a more advanced level than we see in the US. The US are broadly, they're moving to cloud, things are happening. That's where the cloud providers live. They're very used to that environment. The complexity that we have when you move to the EU and the EMEA region is we have things like data governance in place. And we have had that for a long time. Everybody thinks that GDPR was, oh, look what happened 2 years ago. But, you know, that's not the reality. No. The reality of the situation is you go back 10 years, you go back 15 years, you know, the GDPR itself span out of something from 95. Switzerland's had this stuff in 2007, 2008. Yeah. France and Germany have had strict rules about governing the management of data as it relates to workers and people doing their job forever, really. And so that is a layer of complexity, which has means that when companies are looking at cloud, they actually want to have a much more granular understanding. To what Lee was saying, where is my data? Who's managing my data? How is my data moving around in this environment? And so that's where our multi-cloud conversation is actually coming into power. I mean, we know that a lot of people, when they think multi-cloud, what they're thinking is, oh, I use multiple clouds. What we're actually saying, this is the conversation about how do you orchestrate and manage what you're doing across the multiple cloud environments in which you live. How do you move data in a secure manner between application in cloud A and console in cloud B? How do you make a decision? I mean, we were talking about cost earlier. What if cloud provider A suddenly becomes much cheaper for a particular type of workload than cloud provider B? Can I seamlessly move my data over there without affecting a customer or putting that data at risk? This is the multi-cloud conversation, and that's, you know, it's looking to the future of what people need to do and the challenges. I think I didn't really touch on the APAC region there either. I mean, when you move towards the Middle East and APAC, they get even more interesting because they have data protection, but they also have so many small countries that do things in different ways where actually the cloud providers don't even exist. Now, I was in Egypt recently, for example, and they have frustrations there because Amazon and Microsoft are not in their region. So if they want to host workloads, they actually have to do it in another country. Then they have to consider the political complexities of, is that a country that we can actually engage with at a business level today? Will we still be able to engage with them in 3 years at a business level, or will things have changed? So it's very complicated in those regions. So, yeah, I mean, it is really interesting, and there are a whole bunch of different challenges, but most of them are coming down to the basics of security and understanding.
Mit Lee Fisher komme ich dann auf das Thema künstliche Intelligenz, auf Englisch Artificial Intelligence oder in Kurzform AI, zu sprechen. Mittlerweile scheint fast jede neue IT-Technologie auch über eine KI-Komponente zu verfügen. Auch in den Lösungen von Juniper Networks kommt KI zum Einsatz. Ich bitte Lee Fisher kurz zu erläutern, wie künstliche Intelligenz Juniper Networks und dann letztendlich auch deren Kunden dabei unterstützt, ihr Cybersecurity-Level zu erhöhen.
AI opens one of those topics that can end up being, you know, 4 hours long in its entirety. Because Lawrence and I have had many conversations over many dark beers while we've been in Germany even, that actually talk about that. And one of the things that strike us is, first of all, there's a lot of focus today on where AI is actually going to play a role. And then exactly how is it going to benefit an organization? So for me, the first instance where we're seeing some sort of credible steps in towards AI is in the ability to detect change, the ability to detect that something has happened that's unusual from the normal across the environment. And of course, that's based on organizations that have a clearer picture of what's happening across their business so that they can actually create a baseline or picture of normality to then sort of compare and contrast against. AI is only ever as good as the data that's being fed into it that gives it a model to learn from. So the more information that you have, the better visibility, and that's where I start at every conversation, it makes a significant difference. Beyond the ability to detect changes, there are some advantages that we're seeing in towards being able to identify exactly what the actual threat is potentially trying to do. So based on its behavior again, you're able to start and make predictions as to where, you know, your attention should be drawn inside the organization specifically to help speed up the process of mitigating against those threats.
Am Ende gibt es dann wieder den obligatorischen Blick in die Kristallkugel. Lee Fisher macht den Anfang, Lawrence Pitt hat das letzte Wort.
Very interesting topic. For a start, and again, I don't want to say visibility and just keep saying that one, but IoT world and 5G, they it's almost like pouring petrol into that problem, right? It's going to burn. Because the nature of those devices is they're built around flexibility. I mean, I haven't seen that many IoT devices that come with an Ethernet port for you to connect a wire to. So by virtue of what they are and where they're likely to be is anywhere. I mean, even in this hall, you're likely to have tens of thousands of these devices already. And so consider the proliferation of what they're being, what's included in that terminology of what an IoT device is. It could be anything from the microphone that you're holding here that gives straight away a convenient way of you sending the recorded data onto something else. It could be the system that's controlling the lighting or the heating in here. But it could also be a smart car, right? So where is the standard? What is it that's the capabilities that we're talking about in terms of a device? And therein, the flip side of that is saying, where's the consistency in terms of protection? Can you put a sensor in it that's running on a farm in Uganda? Can you put an antivirus client on that? No. Can you put a desktop firewall on these things? Of course not. So there's a problem in the sense that these things are all different. And the virtue of them being different results in how do I protect them in a same, consistent way? And that's where we feel strongly that the network, because these all require a network to function on, is the place to actually provide appropriate levels of protection in the future. So I think that we're going to see a movement, if you will, from the endpoint and the endpoint protection models that we've learned to protect, which have a human at the end of them, right? The piece of wetware, you and me, that will click on something that we shouldn't have, to being instead a little tool that's been providing a functional utility to the business somewhere connected onto a network that doesn't have a human on a keyboard on an email client responsible to do something for the criminal. And when so many things add up into no one knows where they are, no one knows what they're doing, no one knows where they are, how to protect them, this is why that attack surface, in my opinion, becomes a very tempting target for the criminals. And as we go into the future, more of it will come. So I'm pretty sure that that's a big problem. And there's that petrol analogy again. So we're going to be spilling into this existing problem that we know already.
To add to that, something I would say is it is going to get more and more difficult to talking about what is the endpoint, and the endpoint is changing. Actually, we won't even necessarily be able to easily identify what that endpoint is without seeing it, because so much of the traffic that is moving around on the network now is encrypted, end-to-end encryption. So you can't see within that. So when we're talking about things like cloud and the growth in data and the growth in information that's coming in, something else that is going to have to change is how we look at behavioral-based security rather than knowledge-based security, because I have no idea what that data traffic is. I don't know what's in there, but I know that it happens all the time. Therefore, if suddenly it does that and starts jumping up and down, I know that something has changed with that traffic, and I need to flag that and I need to deal with that situation, because everything is moving towards the model of becoming encrypted, and it is going to make things more complex when we're looking at security to be able to spot what's happened. If you try to spot what's happened based on your knowledge of what's already happened rather than an understanding of I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Soweit Folge 3 des Cloud Computing Report Special zur ITSA 2019. Mein Gesprächspartner in der nächsten Folge ist Michael Veit, Security-Experte bei der Firma Sophos. Falls Sie regelmäßig über neue Folgen im Cloud Computing Report Podcast informiert werden möchten, abonnieren Sie uns am besten auf Spotify, Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts oder Google Podcasts. Falls Sie regelmäßig über neue News und Hintergrundberichte zum Thema Cloud Computing informiert werden möchten, abonnieren Sie am besten unseren Newsletter unter www.cloud-computing-report.de/newsletter. So viel für heute, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal.